I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The Israeli attack that took place today on Qatari soil. We cannot call it anything other than state terrorism practiced by someone like Netanyahu.
Global condemnation is mounting after Israel bombed Qatar's capital, Doha, attempting to take out senior Hamas leaders who had gathered to consider a U.S. proposal for a Gaza ceasefire. Hamas leadership survived the strike, but six other people were killed. We'll speak with DropSite News co-founder Jeremy Scahill, whose latest piece is headlined "The 100-word ceasefire proposal Trump sent Hamas." Then here comes the sun, a last chance for the climate and a fresh chance for civilization. Climate activist and author Bill McKibben has a new book out as the Trump administration grows increasingly hostile to renewable energy.
We don't allow windmills, and we don't want the solar panels.
The planet's overheating, and this is the darkest political moment of my life. But there is one big good thing happening. That's all of a sudden the remarkable and explosive rise of clean energy around the world. Such a big and good thing that it might take a bite out of both the climate and the authoritarianism crisis.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel targeted senior Hamas leadership in Qatar yesterday, launching a military strike on Doha. Hamas says its top leaders there were considering a U.S. proposal for a Gaza ceasefire, though they survived the strike. Five lower-ranking members died in the attack. A Qatari security staffer was also killed. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke after the strike.
At noon today, I convened the heads of Israel's security organizations and authorized a surgical precision strike on the terrorist chiefs of Hamas. These are the same terrorist chiefs who planned, launched, and celebrated the horrific massacres of October 7th.
Einav Zangauer, the mother of the Israeli hostage Matan Zangauer, condemned Netanyahu for the attack on Qatar.
I am trembling with fear. I am trembling with fear. It could be that at this very moment, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has essentially sentenced my Matan to death. Anyone who deliberately chooses to endanger my child's life is murdering him. Why does the Prime Minister insist on blowing up every small chance for a deal? Why?
World leaders condemned Israel's strike on Qatar, including France, Germany, Britain, and the European Union. Germany's chancellor called Israel's attack on Doha unacceptable, adding, quote, "the war must not spread to the entire region," unquote. The president of the United Arab Emirates arrived in Qatar today. Jordan's Crown Prince Hussein is also set to visit. Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is expected to visit on Thursday. The White House said it warned Qatar prior to the attack, but Qatar said it only received notice from the U.S. as its capital was being hit by Israeli strikes. Speaking to reporters yesterday, President Trump said he was, quote, "very unhappy about Israel's attack." On social media, Trump wrote, quote, "I view Qatar as a strong ally and friend of the U.S. and feel very badly about the location of the attack," Trump wrote. Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani said yesterday Qatar's mediation efforts were central to its identity and that the Israeli attack would not deter its diplomatic role.
The Israeli attack that took place today on Qatari soil. We cannot call it anything other than state terrorism practiced by someone like Netanyahu in the context of these systematic policies and his ongoing attempts that have destabilized regional security and stability. It's simply a clear message to the region as a whole.
Israel continues to bomb Gaza City, ordering the full evacuation of the city's residents to the so-called safe zone of Al-Muwasi, which it has bombed repeatedly. Around 800,000 Palestinians are already sheltering there. Israel has targeted it at least 109 times, killing over 2,000 people, according to Gaza's government media office. Residents in Gaza City say they have no safe place to go.
We are attempting to delay death a little longer. We have been displaced approximately 30 times, moving from one death to another, but we are trying to postpone death a little. What is the fault of these children? Why is this happening to this child and that one? Oh, Arabs, Muslims, negotiators, please find a solution for us in any possible manner.
Al Jazeera is reporting Israeli attacks have killed 20 Palestinians in Gaza today, including 15 displaced people sheltering in tents west of Gaza City. In the past 24 hours, five more Palestinians have starved to death, including a child. Meanwhile, a BBC investigation has found members of an anti-Islam biker gang, the Infidels Motorcycle Club, is working in Gaza for UG Solutions, which is providing armed security for the shadowy U.S. and Israeli-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. According to the United Nations, 1,135 Palestinians have been killed seeking food near GHF aid sites. In the occupied West Bank, Israel ordered the demolition of the homes of two Palestinian gunmen who opened fire at a bus stop in Jerusalem, killing six people. Israel also announced it's revoking the work permits of hundreds who live in the villages where the men lived. National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said in the wake of the attack, more Israelis would be eligible to receive licenses to carry guns. Organizers of a Gaza-bound aid flotilla say another one of their ships was attacked by a suspected drone while docked in Tunisian waters. The British ship sustained some fire damage on its top deck. It was the second such attack on the flotilla in recent days. The Global Samud flotilla is preparing to leave soon to Gaza and attempt to break the Israeli blockade. Passengers include the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg and Nelson Mandela's grandson, the South African MP Mandla Mandela. Activists with the group Code Pink disrupted President Trump's visit to a D.C. restaurant Tuesday night. The activists managed to get within feet of the president while holding banners and chanting, "Free D.C., free Palestine, Trump is the Hitler of our time."
Trump is the Hitler!
Trump was attending the dinner with Vice President J.D. Vance, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, who is now referred to officially as Secretary of War, and other officials. The Nepali army has deployed troops to the streets of Kathmandu to quell massive youth-led anti-corruption protests that have left at least 22 people dead. On Tuesday, protesters set fire to the parliament and other government buildings. The protests continued even after the government lifted its ban on social media platforms, as well as the resignation of the prime minister, KP Sharma Oli. Protesters who gathered outside the parliament said Nepal needs new leadership.
Everything that has happened is not because of the social ban. We need a young leader now. We are looking for change. Time is up for these old leaders. We don't need them. We need the youth.
A nationwide curfew in Nepal is in place until Thursday. In France, more than 250 people have been arrested in nationwide demonstrations against President Emmanuel Macron and his economic policies. On Tuesday, Macron tapped his close ally, Sébastien Lecornu, to be the new prime minister. He is France's fifth prime minister in 2 years. His predecessor, François Bayrou, resigned as prime minister after losing a no-confidence vote. Poland says it shot down several Russian drones that flew into its territory overnight. Poland condemned Moscow for what it called an act of aggression. European Union Foreign Policy Chief Kaja Kallas described the drone incident as the most serious European airspace violation since Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022. Meanwhile, in eastern Ukraine, at least 24 people were killed Tuesday when a Russian glide bomb struck a group of Ukrainians waiting in line to collect their pensions. Most of the victims were elderly. 19 others were injured in the attack. In Turkey, opposition lawmakers of the Republican People's Party, the main rival of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, barricaded themselves inside their party's headquarters on Monday as police barged in using shields and pepper spray. Earlier, a court had ordered the opposition party's provincial head in Istanbul to be removed and replaced by another official picked by the court. The party rejected that ruling as several of its members have been arrested and jailed in the government's crackdown on the opposition. Here's Özgür Özel, the chair of the Republican People's Party.
We will stand against people attacking our republic with our will as strong as steel and with no fear, with the same determination and perseverance of 105 years ago. We are not afraid and we will not surrender.
In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, members of a militia and a civil society group in the eastern city of Uvira are accusing Congo's military of opening fire on protesters and killing three people. The protesters were calling for the removal of a new commander posted to the region who is accused of backing the Rwanda-backed M23 rebels.
I am Congolese and I want peace. Gasita should leave. He should show us the boat he came on so we can send him back, because we Congolese want peace.
The M23 rebel group is among more than 100 militant groups fighting in eastern Congo and has emerged as the strongest adversary of the Congolese government. Earlier this year, President Trump brokered a deal between the DRC and Rwanda, allowing the U.S. to tap the DRC's rich mineral resources. In legal news, the U.S. Supreme Court's allowing the Trump administration to withhold over $4 billion in foreign aid, at least for now. Chief Justice John Roberts issued what's known as an administrative stay, putting on hold a lower court's ruling. The AIDS Vaccine Advocacy Coalition and the Global Health Council had brought the legal challenge against Trump for freezing aid money that had been approved by Congress. On Tuesday, the Supreme Court also agreed to decide on the legality of President Trump's move to impose sweeping tariffs on many nations without congressional approval, arguments expected to be heard in November. A federal judge Tuesday blocked President Trump's firing of Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook. The ruling means Cook will continue to stay on the board of the central bank as her case is heard in court. In her ruling, U.S. District Judge Giacobbe wrote, quote, "The public interest in Federal Reserve independence weighs in favor of Cook's reinstatement. That independence is critical in helping the nation's banking system to promote stability," she said. Trump has tried to fire Cook, citing allegations of mortgage fraud. Trump has also repeatedly threatened to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell as he pushes the central bank to cut interest rates more rapidly. A Georgia judge said he'll toss out the racketeering charges against all 61 defendants accused of conspiring to block the construction of a $90 million Atlanta police training center known as Cop City. Fulton County Judge Kevin Farmer said, quote, "At this time, I do not find the attorney general have the authority to bring this RICO case," unquote. The defendants are members of the Defend the Atlanta Forest movement, which had warned that the training center would increase militarization of the police. Despite the protests, the center opened in April. And in Rochester, New York, ICE agents were forced to abruptly halt a raid after local residents came out to protest. The standoff occurred as ICE agents attempted to detain three men who were fixing a roof. ICE arrested one of the men, but left the two others on the roof as the size of the protest grew. Mitchie Wenderlich of the group Metro Justice said, quote, "Within an hour, several hundred people, including lawmakers and clergy, showed up to witness and protect our neighbors. Rochester shows up to protect each other, and I'm proud of our community," unquote. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, global condemnation is mounting after Israel bombed Qatar's capital, Doha, attempting to take out senior Hamas leaders who gathered to consider a U.S. proposal for a Gaza ceasefire. Though the Hamas leadership survived, six people were killed. We'll speak with Dropsite News co-founder Jeremy Scahill. Stay with us.
It's a lesson too late for the learning. Made of sand, made of sand. In the wake of an eye, my soul's turning. In your hand, in your hand. Are you going away with no word of farewell? Will there be not a trace left behind? I could have loved you better, didn't mean to be unkind. You know that was the last thing on my mind. You've got reasons aplenty for going. This I know, this I know. For the weeds have been steadily growing. Please don't go, please don't go. Are you going?
The last thing on my mind, Tom Paxton performing with the late Mary Travers. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Israel targeted senior Hamas leadership in Qatar yesterday, launching a military strike on Doha. Hamas says its top leaders there were considering a U.S. proposal for a Gaza ceasefire. Though they survived the strike, five lower-ranking members died in the attack. A Qatari security staffer was also killed. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke yesterday after the attack.
At noon today, I convened the heads of Israel's security organizations and authorized a surgical precision strike on the terrorist chiefs of Hamas. These are the same terrorist chiefs who planned, launched, and celebrated the horrific massacres of October 7th.
The leaders of Jordan and the United Arab Emirates are reportedly set to arrive in Qatar today. Saudi Arabian Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman is expected to visit tomorrow. Meanwhile, the families of the remaining Israeli hostages held in Gaza say they fear for the fate of their loved ones. Einav Zangar, the mother of Israeli hostage Matan, condemned Netanyahu for the attack on Qatar.
I am trembling with fear. I am trembling with fear. It could be that at this very moment, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has essentially sentenced my Matan to death. Anyone who deliberately chooses to endanger my child's life is murdering him. Why does the Prime Minister insist on blowing up every small chance for a deal? Why?
World leaders condemned the strike, including France, Germany, Britain, the European Union. Germany's chancellor called Israel's attack on Qatar unacceptable, adding, quote, the war must not spread to the entire region, unquote. China and Russia have also denounced the attack. The White House said it warned Qatar just prior to the attack, but Qatar said it only received notice from the U.S. as the capital was being hit by Israeli strikes. On social media, Trump wrote, quote, I view Qatar as a strong ally and friend of the U.S. and feel very badly about the location of the attack. Trump spoke yesterday.
I'm not thrilled about the whole situation. It's not a good situation. But I will say this, we want the hostages back, but we are not thrilled about the way that went down today.
Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani said yesterday Qatar's mediation efforts were central to its identity and that the Israeli attack will not deter its diplomatic role.
The Israeli attack that took place today on Qatari soil. We cannot call it anything other than state terrorism practiced by someone like Netanyahu in the context of these systematic policies and his ongoing attempts that have destabilized regional security and stability. It's simply a clear message to the region as a whole.
For more, we're joined by Jeremy Scahill, co-founder of DropSite News. His latest piece is an exclusive headlined, The 100-Word Ceasefire Proposal Trump Sent Hamas. Jeremy's a former senior reporter and correspondent at The Intercept. Jeremy, welcome back to Democracy Now! If you can just first respond to Israel bombing Qatar, trying to take out, assassinate the Hamas leadership, which apparently it did not succeed in doing?
Well, you know, first of all, Amy, let's remember that Qatar houses U.S. Central Command and is part of this security umbrella that Donald Trump spoke about, including recently when he made his trip around these Gulf countries. So the idea that the United States was just informed of this at the last minute, you know, Trump said, oh, the U.S. military informed him, and then he scrambled to try to let Qatar know. And he said, oh, it, you know, my special envoy, Steve Witkoff, I told him to call Qatar, but oops, he did it too late and the bombing had already happened. That's not a believable narrative at all. And in fact, what we've seen over the past couple of weeks is Donald Trump making very thinly veiled threats against the Hamas leadership, directly mentioning them and saying that nasty things are going to happen to them if they don't accept his ultimatum, which essentially boiled down to a surrender agreement where Hamas was being asked to hand over all of the Israeli captives. There are roughly 20 of them believed to be still alive, and then another 30 or so who are deceased. And Trump has been saying that some nasty things are going to happen to the Hamas leadership if they don't do this. But I think it's important to back up, because the context of you know, of the lead up to this over the past year is almost never mentioned in Western media. It's as though history begins each time the U.S. or Israel make an ultimatum, and those ultimatums are aimed at trying to blame Hamas for a continuation of this war of extermination against the Palestinians. Last summer, in July of 2024, the United States was engaged in negotiations with Hamas. Hamas, on July 2nd, accepted a ceasefire deal. This is in 2024, the summer of 2024, that they were told that the United States had signed off on, and that if Hamas agreed to certain amendments, that Israel was going to be on board. And in the midst of those discussions, Israel assassinated Ismail Haniyeh, who was actually the last democratically elected prime minister of Palestine, not just of Gaza. And he was Hamas's political leader and its chief negotiator, and they assassinated him. And then nothing happened with the ceasefire until Donald Trump was running for election, and he and Joe Biden then endorsed a ceasefire that, by all accounts, Trump sort of pushed through with Netanyahu that went into effect in January. Israel blew up that deal on March 2nd, unilaterally exited it, imposed a full spectrum siege on Gaza, barring any food, medicine, or other life essentials from entering the Gaza Strip. On March 18th, it then resumed its genocidal campaign of terror bombings against Gaza that have endured to this moment. Then, a couple of months ago, Steve Witkoff, the special envoy, and Benjamin Netanyahu said that Hamas must accept what they called the Witkoff framework, which was a 13-point plan for a two-month ceasefire during which half of the living Israeli captives would have been released and there would have been negotiations on ending the war. It was a very difficult framework for Hamas because it came very close to crossing some of the red lines that Hamas had defined, that it felt that if it agreed to these terms, it would effectively amount to a surrender of the Palestinian cause of liberation. But on August 18th, just over 3 weeks ago, Hamas formally agreed to what mediators said was 98% of the terms that had been demanded by Netanyahu and Trump. Israel did not respond to that in any formal way. Trump and Israel then escalated their threats against Hamas after they accepted it. And Amy, by the way, Hamas made unprecedented concessions, concessions that include demanding a clear timeline for the withdrawal of Israeli forces from the Philadelphia corridor in southern Gaza. That was a huge deal for Hamas. They reduced the number of Palestinian captives held by Israel that would be released in a deal. They dropped their demand that the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, this scheme run by the United States and Israel, some 2,000 Palestinians have died seeking aid since the GHF went into effect. Hamas dropped its demand that the GHF be expelled from Gaza as part of a peace deal. and it was willing to accept a full circle buffer zone in totally around the Gaza Strip that would be controlled by Israel and at points would pierce 1,500 meters deeper into Gaza. So Hamas made these concessions and then they waited. And the response from Netanyahu was to announce a final solution plan for Gaza City. And they began ratcheting up the terror bombings. They continued to burn children alive in tents. And then they started bombing massive residential apartment towers in Gaza, some of which housed hundreds of Palestinian families. All of this happened, Amy, after Hamas had accepted a proposal filled with concessions that the mediators said was 98% of the demands from Netanyahu and Trump. And then last week, the United States began some back channel discussions with Hamas. And they said, listen, Donald Trump wants to end this war. He's has some ideas. And Trump's idea, I was told by senior Hamas officials, was that as a initial gesture, Hamas would release all of the Israeli captives living and dead. And then Trump would see if he could do something about restarting negotiations to try to end the war. Well, Hamas responded to this in a remarkably diplomatic way. They said they're open to any proposals, either a comprehensive deal where all captives would be released at once at the beginning of a deal, if there were proper international guarantees and a guarantee that Israel would stop the genocide and withdraw, or they were open to returning to the original framework that they agreed to, which was packed full of concessions. So Trump then submits, and we obtained it, a 100-word summary. And it says within 48 hours, all the Israelis have to be released in exchange for some Palestinians. It says that Israeli withdrawal will be contingent upon a new government acceptable to Israel being imposed on Gaza, and that Israel will maintain full security control of the Gaza Strip. It says that aid will be allowed in, but it doesn't say who will allow the aid in or how much aid would be allowed in. And it says that Trump will guarantee for 60 days that a ceasefire will hold as long as negotiations are continuing. Now, this violates so many of Hamas's red lines, but their response to Trump was, we're open to any deal. And I'm told by sources from within Hamas that part of what they were meeting to discuss at the time of this bombing was the idea of posing to Trump a series of questions and clarifications, because a 100-word document does not form a ceasefire agreement when you're facing down a genocide. And so the basic fact is this: 3 weeks ago, they agreed to concessions. Everyone ignored it. Trump then issues a new ultimatum in the form of a 100-word document. They're meeting to discuss it, and then Israel bombs the Hamas offices in a sovereign nation, Qatar, that houses U.S. Central Command. No air defense systems were activated. The United States security umbrella was nowhere to be found. And then Trump concocts this story about how how Steve Witkoff was just a little bit too late in informing Qatar that this happened. So what we see here is part of a long pattern of Israel assassinating the very people, or attempting to assassinate the very people that the president of the United States claims he wants to negotiate with. They tried to kill the very people that would have been sitting across the table in these negotiations.
Jeremy, I wanted to ask you, the Qatari Prime Minister Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman said, he was quoted as saying, quote, we have reached a decisive moment where there must be a response from the entire region to such barbaric actions. Is it your sense that the other Arab nations in the region, what can they do, or what do you think they would be willing to do in response to this attack?
Remember, Juan, that in Trump's first term, he made a big deal about the so-called Abraham Accords. And, you know, the first country and the primary country to accept it was the United Arab Emirates, which many people in the Arab world and certainly Palestinians view as essentially a self-declared suburb of Israel for all practical purposes on this issue. And we've watched as Netanyahu has expanded these wars, Gaza, the West Bank, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, Iran, now Qatar, and they've done nothing. There's been no response other than strongly worded statements from any Arab country. And so while they're all saying now the threshold has been crossed, what are they going to do? Are they going to militarily strike Israel? We've watched Palestinians burned alive for 2 years, and not a single Arab country except Yemen has stood up to do anything about it or taken any risks. And almost the entire Yemeni cabinet was assassinated recently by Israel because of the fact that they were the only ones in the world, in addition to Iran, in terms of nation states, that stood up to them. So, you know, anything short of these Arab countries saying This is a genocidal regime that is operating with impunity, backed by the United States. Anything short of a military confrontation is worthless. Israel doesn't care anymore about these normalization agreements. You know why? Because they have shown the entire world that they can do whatever they want and no country is going to stand up to them. They have the huge world bully behind them in the form of the United States. They are a nuclear armed power. They're running a scorched earth bombing campaign, and they're trying to wipe the Palestinians off the map. So, you know, I hope I'm wrong.